make sure your fellowship. Let's continue on here in verse 4, where Paul brings out the importance of the repetitive nature of teaching, that is a necessity in the Christian life. As he hammers on here the point of the effectiveness of face-to-face, proving its validity here as it applies to these saints. And Team Paul was with them previously, evangelizing them, that prepared them under face-to-face regimen to deal with the test of persecutions, etc., that they were destined to undergo along with Team Paul. Again, verse 4 here, for indeed, when we were with you, we kept telling you on a repetitive basis, in perfect tense, in advance that we were going to suffer affliction. And so it came to pass, as you know. So the principle here and the point is that face-to-face teaching, face-to-face regimen of NPR, brings the believer priest under the guidance and tutelage, if you will, of the shepherd who is there as part of his divine design of his office and function of his gift to protect and exhort the believer priest in regards to their Christian life on a personal and corporate basis in this respect. And this looks at, obviously, assumes that the pastor is adjusted himself, being led by the Holy Spirit, and obviously he is in his position as a pastor over a local church. And it brings out, in contrast, that pastors and believers void of face-to-face are really at a disadvantage in regards to their Christian life and fulfilling God's plan. And this is what we was bringing out, and it'll be brought out in verse 5, as because of Paul's absence from them, he did not know what their spiritual condition ultimately was until he heard back the report from Timothy in this respect. Now, 16, where we left off here. For Team Paul, it was imperative that these believers were well-grounded in the doctrine of suffering on behalf of Christ. As he brings out that their teaching included this aspect. So 17, the infinity to suffer affliction, libo, literally means to compress, and emphasizes the pressures that come about for being part of an adjusted ministry. To the degree you hold fast to the truth of doctrine, but to that degree you find and open your avenue of possibilities of those who will take issue with you. To the degree you fan out and embrace the entire realm of doctrine, to that degree you up, if you will, the odds of someone taking issue with you. You want to compromise, then you lower those odds. That's the way this works. You compromise doctrine. To the degree you want to compromise it, to that degree you'll get along with cosmos. And to that degree, you'll have less people coming up and taking issue with you in regards to your particular life and what you're doing. But when you stand for the entire realm of doctrine, and you embrace it across the board, then you place yourself in a position where you will face, if you will, the maximum aspect of enemy attack and opportunity for people to take issue with you otherwise. And obviously, it's imperative that the believer understands that when you hook in with doctrine, you will experience antagonism, people taking issue with you at that level. And Paul taught his churches that. And these believers obviously became well grounded in that fact, and because of that, they were able to, in their own population, obviously, they were able to, therefore, face the test that God put them through corporately as a church early on in their church history. And again, this church is not a fundy church. It's not lukewarm. It is a well-established, sound, adjusted local church. even apart from time and grade and doctrine. But what doctrine they had was sound. They obviously latched onto it and took it serious and applied it at the level necessary at that point in time in their history. So 18, the repetitive teaching on suffering became imperative now here with respect to their situation in view of the persecution that was building while Team Paul was with them. So 19, Team Paul, they, could see in turn the storm clouds building for the Thessalonian believers. Right? In fact, he was there face to face and personally involved with this local church. The antagonizers started rearing their ugly heads, and because they were directly affiliated in regards to the situation in and of itself with the church corporately, they saw what was happening. And they knew, was able to glean from that very fact, that, oh, it looks like this church is going to have quite a job in regards to enduring for the faith. Look at these antagonizers already. And then, obviously, it is validated based on the fact that they were ran out of town, just how intense it was going to be. So they were there, they were present, they were part of the test of this church, and were able to, therefore, help the church and enable it by forewarning them in regards to the doctrine necessary they need to know and clearly understand in regards to their situation at hand. So they could see the storm clouds brewing and building for these Thessalonian believers. So 20, now while the doctrine could have been presented in general otherwise, the personal presence with this church gave their spiritual leaders a heads up to address it at a level necessary. For indeed, when we were with you, we kept telling you in advance. They saw it happening. They knew what kind of tests they were going to face based on their geographical location and the type of antagonism around them. And therefore, they were at a heads up in order to exhort and give the proper doctrine necessary to handle it at this level. So 21, in that way, doctrine is tailored for the needs of every local church, as the pastor teacher is experientially acquainted with particular pressures surrounding believers. Churches have, well, tests are similar, obviously. Churches still have their own tests uniquely, corporately and otherwise. Well, because the pastor is not there and going through the experience with the church. Not going through with the experience, it misses something. You know, yeah, you can get condolence, you can get encouraged from people that are not involved in the test, but you got somebody that's in the test with you, and they're hanging firm, and they're standing tough. Their exhortation really means something. It has a different impact. It's like being in battle, and you get a letter from home that says, hang in there, keep courage. You go, well, yeah, that's encouraging. But then you've got your compadre right next to you that's in the battle with you, and he's telling you to do that. It's a whole different scenario. It doesn't even compare. Now are you getting an idea of the difference of the benefit of face-to-face and papers and people that don't want to be a part of the local church, corporately otherwise, in this respect? They miss out in regards to why God designed an office called pastor-teacher. See? And the proper function of the local church otherwise in this regard. And as we know, doctrine puts right pastor with right congregation. The tests are tailored in regards to the church and their corporate volition as well as individually. And the fact that we're all in this boat together, obviously I have an investment of my own personally as your pastor, whereas those who also come on a full-time basis have their own investment, and that gives an additional added quality of commitment and concern and, if you will, personal touch with respect to the church corporately in all aspects of it. We are like a family. All right, kids, shut up, straighten up. You know. Yeah, we'll have our squabbles. Now, you show me a church that doesn't have squabbles, and I'll show you a church that's blind to the realities. I don't care how adjusted the church is. This church isn't perfect. They obviously are playing at a very high level. They had the kind of politicization necessary to attain, but they weren't perfect. Paul will essentially tell them, now you haven't arrived yet in this regards. Yeah, we have our squabbles. So what? We have our STA outbreak. So what? Forgive, forget, move on, get a hold of your STA, and hang in there all together, and we'll continue to go down the glory road intact, corporately, with the proper divine love and camaraderie of the brotherhood in this respect. And we'll do it together. People that hold to any type of approach to their spiritual life apart from being a part of the Jesse Bubble Church are completely and totally just deceived, if not outright ignorant, in regards to the divine design that God has provided for believers to fulfill His plan in the church age dispensation. And that includes the importance of that is a shepherd being with their sheep physically. So we have our tests corporately. I know what they are. I can tailor my prayers that way. Exhortations is necessary that way, etc. People that aren't here, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know. How am I to shepherd them? Well, here's my right pastor. If they live halfway across the country, well, how am I going to shepherd you? Well, I listen to your tapes. So, you're not listening very closely because I've told you more than once you need to get your butt back here. In so many words, or at least under some shepherd. So, all that stuff is nothing but excuses. Excuses for people that don't want to fly doctrine otherwise. They have their own sacred cows. They're pursuing a life. Well, that's fine. That's your choice. I give you that. I'm not going to get in your way. Never have. But I'm also going to warn, obviously, and hopefully the warning will keep people from going that direction erroneously otherwise. If they'll listen, they don't. It's just like a child going out on their own, letting them go do their own thing in their world. Didn't want to listen to their parents. I'm tired of living with my parents. I'm too old for this. Fine. Get out there and let the world beat you up. Then let God beat you up. Because you can't keep your SCA under wraps. And we'll see. Where'd that come from? I don't know. Maybe I'm in fellowship. 22. You can't get this kind of personal attention through tapes. You just can't. Or on TV, actually. Even that way. Best, these things are designed as a substitute. We have a sick room if you're sick. That's what it's there for. If you're sick, we don't want to get sick. Somebody's physically not able to sit in a chair, a regular chair. We try to make accommodations otherwise. Hopefully we get out to our new building. We'll have better setup that way. This is not the best setup. We understand that. But obviously, if we're designed to get it through, if you're designed to get the doctrine the rest of your life through TV, then why don't we all just go home and I'll hook into FX and we'll do it. You won't have to drive across town. You won't have to drive in the snow. It's not the divine design. This is all of us together. Whether you love me or hate me, see. Which I don't, I'm not saying anybody hates me. So. But, you know, you get the drift. It's just like a marriage. For better or for worse. The importance of King Paul's shepherding in this respect is then validated. And so it came to pass, as you know. 24, the validity of emphasis in their teaching was proven beyond doubt as the Thessalonians watched the very doctrine taught being played out. Here's a doctrine. This is what you can expect in the Christian life. And by the way, this local church here, this is Paul. All right, yeah, I'm Paul. This local church here in Thessalonica. There's some really unscrupulous religious types right here, and they're very antagonistic. And they're already showing signs of giving me trouble. I've run across these people before. But these are the kind of people that will do what they can to attack and take issue with me and others that line up with my teaching. And the doctor says we're going to suffer and blah, blah, blah. So he gets a scenario. So he's there. He's able to do this. And sure enough, his teaching is validated. And it's no different. Now, here's the doctrine. If you don't apply this doctrine, this is what's going to happen. Otherwise, this is what's going to happen to your Christian life. You want to get under your STA, run out of fellowship, then you'll get divine discipline. You'll get under deserved suffering. Stay in fellowship. All these aspects of doctrine are there to prepare you in advance in regards to things regarding life. A life under doctrine. And as time goes on, these doctrines play out. And these things will ultimately all be validated. One way or the other. All the doctrine will be. Every aspect of God's Word will be fulfilled. So, he taught them. He exhorted them. This is the way it is. Bingo. They're under the test. So, 24 again. The validity of emphasis in their teaching was proven beyond doubt as the Thessalonians watched the very doctrine taught them played out. 25, this is brought out with the indicative mood. It came to pass. Verse 26, their words were confirmed in the persecution that followed their departure from the city. They got ran out of town, and then obviously what pressure they were under as a church after the fact, as they sought to struggle to hang in there with it and keep intact as a local church, etc. So all these words came about in validation of the teaching itself. 2017, Paul knew the realities around them, coupled with the doctrine of suffering, and in effect prophesied and warned. It wasn't necessary for him to have to give a prophecy on this occasion. He could see it. The writing was on the wall. You know, you can look out a lot, and through discernment, you can say, oh man, this keeps going like this. This is what's going to happen. So, this is what happened. But in effect, because of the doctrine of Saul as their shepherd, he was able to, if you will, prophesy in that sense. In effect, a warning. Look out. You're going to endure this persecution, this suffering in your history as a church in a great way in this respect. So you put doctrine together. You stay sober spiritually. You look at life. It gives you discernment. It gives you insight. And you're prepared then to meet the things and tests that we have in life head on and not be shaken and thrown off balance otherwise. But, again, if you don't keep your emotions in control, you don't stay in fellowship, you don't maintain your NPR, have the correct teaching, all these other things to that degree, it skewers it. It puts you at a disadvantage. So Team Paul knew the realities around him, coupled with the doctrine of suffering and, in effect, prophesied and warned. 28, Bible doctrine gives positive volition. This kind of discernment, when employed in the proper fashion, the right pastor, teacher, right congregation under NPR. 29, Bible class prepares believers in advance for what to expect in the Christian way of life and what to do. The only issue is whether you're going to listen and do it. Really. It's about that simple. Here's a doctrine. You either line up and do it or take your risk otherwise. Ain't like being on a beach without a lifeguard. You're on a beach and no lifeguard on duty. Swim at your own risk. That's not the way it's designed to be here. Now, lifeguard's on duty. That's me. And I'll protect you all I can. But look out. Here comes a rogue wave. Don't jump in the ocean now. And you do. Sorry about that. Rogue waves. People are just starting to see half of what God can do and what He does do. So doctrine is designed to prepare you in advance for your Christian life. Exhort and tell you to establish a prayer life. You've got to be fastidious in rebound. You've got to maintain NPR. These are basic doctrines. You need to apply separation in your Christian life, etc., etc. If you don't do these things, then here's the alternatives. So, 30, any testing unique to the local church is discerned by the pastor teacher and is able to assert the appropriate doctrine with the proper portions of reference and exhortation. I might hear things that go on in other churches, but I don't know all the facts. I can't really help or prepare anybody in that regard. All I can do, the best I can do, is my own family, my own immediate family, my royal family. Not be any of the pastors in one of my pies, probably anyway. So. 31. God never puts believers through more than they can handle. And the excellent insight and teaching this church received the first 3 months of their Christian experience prepared them for what the evangelist said would happen. 1 Corinthians 10:13. No temptation has overtaken you that is common to man. All the common human problems, the chips of life. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tested beyond what you are able, but with the testing will provide the way of escape also that you may be able to endure it. Verse 5, titled this verse, Bacon Face to Face Exemplified. The importance of face-to-face has been exemplified in the previous two verses. Now we have Bacon face-to-face exemplified, illustrated. And Paul here gets personal, as throughout the epistle he consistently uses the plural verbs we, reference to the team, again to signify their unity of Paul's volition as communicators, as pastors, if you will, in that respect. As evangelists. But here he gets personal. For this reason, when I could endure it no longer. For this reason, it's literally because of this. You have the preposition dia, D-I-A, followed with the near demonstrative pronoun, houtos, H-O-U-T-O-S. When I can endure no longer. When enduring no longer, literally, you have the temporal circumstantial participle here, present active, the verb stego, S-T-E-G-O. We see same, basically, a repeat of verse 1 of words here. No longer, meketi, M-E-K-E-T-I. Verse 1, the difference was it is in the plural, when we could endure no longer. Here is personal, in the first person. When I can endure no longer. Same terms used, though. Same verbs. I also sent to find out about your faith. So we had an additional reason in regards to the dispatch of Timothy. I also is the compound adjunctive of the conjunction chi and ego put together, cago, K-A-G-O. I myself also sent, again, our verb to send here, aorist active indicative, is pimpo, P-E-M-P-O. Obvious reference to Timothy, though Timothy's name is not mentioned this time. Sent to find out about your faith. You have the purpose here, expression, with your preposition eis, E-I-S, plus the infinitive of purpose, aorist active accusative, with the definite article to, gnosko, G-I-N-O-S-K-O, in order to know, find out about, ascertain. Your pronoun su in the plural, S-U, reference to their faith with the definite article. Again, its use of this vein is the most active faith here in this epistle. Hey, pistis. P-I-S-T-I-S. Versus passive faith. The Bible is called the faith, the word of faith. That's in the passive sense. Active faith looks at the expression of belief. Hence, we describe that as positive wish, believing in the doctrine. Active faith, believing in the passive faith. Then he says, tells us why, for fear that the tempter might have tempted you. You have the negative A, N-E, plus the indefinite adverb, pos, P-O-S. Less in some way is literal translation. Not by any means, or for fear that, captures the nuance, as the New American Standard has it here. The tempter. The tempter is the substantival participle as a title here, present active, with the definite article hope, pirazo, P-E-I-R-A-Z-O, used 38 times in this way, in this form, the substantival participle the verb itself, used 38 times. Then we have a play on words here, the tempter tempted. Aorist active, indicative of the verb, pirazo, repeated, put to the test, tempted, that's tempting is you're being tested, you're being solicited, it's a test of what you're going to do. Might have tempted you, Sue, reference to Thessalonians, and as he states, and our labor should be in vain, connected chi, our. Plural use then, back to the plural use here, reference team Paul, ego. Labor is our noun of the definite article, hope, kapos, K-O-P-O-S. That means hard work. Labor under hardship. We've already seen it in chapter 1, verse 3, chapter 2, verse 9, this particular noun. Should be in vain. Might become is a subjunctive, mood of potential in the Greek of our verb to become, ginomai, G-I-N-O-M-A-I, into, in, vain. You have the preposition ice, E-I-S, followed with our adjective used pronominally here for vanity, all for naught, if you will, kenos, K-E-N-O-S. Has nothing to do with my name. For this reason, when I can endure it no longer. Also sent to find out about your faith, for fear that the tempter might have tempted you, and our labor should be in vain. Alright, now this is verse 5. 1, Paul ends the paragraph here on a personal note. Verses 1 through 5 constitute one single paragraph in the Greek text. So he ends it on a personal note. To this, to highlight his apostolic position among the evangelists and his communicator ultimately responsible for this local church. In other words, the buck stops with Paul in regards to spiritual hierarchy of office and authority in regards to the evangelists. Paul is one of the 12 apostles. 12 apostles carry the highest authority of any office fulfilled by a human being in the church age dispensation. And the spiritual gifts represent this. And the offices in Ephesians 4:11 correlate with that. And next is a prophet, which Silvanus or Silas was a prophet. And then Timothy is regarded to be a pastor-teacher, as 1 and 2 Timothy are books regarding the pastor-teacher, which he is addressed by Paul in both of those epistles, as they were named after him. And you must understand, in the early church, the apostle holding the highest office, he had, in regards to his responsibility, authority over many churches. As they go out in the early church, started establishing churches, the apostles would have authority over different many churches. And obviously, it couldn't be everywhere at once. And the gift of prophecy was also designed to come in and help fill in. Regardless of these churches, these that held that were prophets that held office in communicating fashion, their responsibility was under the apostolic authority in their own roles in that regard. Then, why they had the gift of prophecy, they would prophesy New Testament doctrine. And until we got our epistles written in the New Testament form, the early Christians didn't have the New Testament written like what we have now. But God didn't shortchange them. He made sure the doctrine was gotten to them, and he used particular communicating gifts like this to bring out the doctrine in this respect. And then, as the apostolic period, and understand, even the apostle did not tread in another apostle's canon. Even they had their boundaries geographically. And Paul makes that clear in regards to his epistles. And these people that think their whole world's their canon are a bunch of idiots. Even the apostles didn't operate that fashion. God has geographical will otherwise. But they couldn't be everywhere at once. And obviously, as apostles might have died off, apostles that were remaining would absorb that responsibility. And the last apostle basically living was Apostle John, from all intents and purposes, which he then was the last final of the 12 apostles remaining in this regard. And when the apostolic age ended, the gift of apostle and the gift of prophecy, which were temporary gifts, along with some other temporary gifts such as tongues, healing, things of this nature, these things ceased and quit functioning in this regard. So obviously, it's a transition period there. But at some point in time, these things ceased to exist and function in the church. And in that respect, then you had gifts that were designed to carry the church forward to the remainder of the church age dispensation, gifts that are still extant today. And in the communicating gifts in this regard, evangelist and pastor-teacher are essentially the two gifts that we see that can function, and by all intents and purposes, the gift of the office of evangelist is absorbed by the pastor-teacher in his office, more or less, in his function and role, training, etc. As we'll get a refresher on that when we review the doctrine here in a little bit. In this respect, Paul, as one of the 12, obviously he was the highest authority, so he was the one ultimately responsible for the spiritual conditions of his church, and he would use others who he depended upon. Timothy was definitely a go-to man for him that he trusted, Silas, Sabanus, etc. They could operate and represent him on his behalf in that respect. So here, and I bring all this out so that you have the doctrine necessary to understand the gravity of why Paul is becoming personal now in regards to this. Because he is, if you will, the highest of authority of shepherds that God is using in regards to the Church of Thessalonica. And hence, the buck ultimately stops with Paul. So two again, just to highlight Paul's apostolic position, as he ends it on a personal note, among the evangelists, and hence the communicator ultimately responsible for this local church. Three, this in turn to exemplify, the example, the very personal nature of the pastoral office with respect to their local church and further reason for the importance of face-to-face. Now, the apostle obviously had a shepherding teaching role. We often refer to it as the super gift. It looks like an apostle could do just about anything of any gift. They could prophesy, they could heal, raise people from the dead, but they obviously also taught doctrine, and they shepherd. Peter himself refers to himself as a shepherd, as an apostle, see, in this regard. But here, he's turning attention to the personal nature of this office, of being a shepherd, of having a shepherding role in this respect. So this in turn to exemplify the very personal nature of the pastoral office with respect to their local church, and further reason for the importance of face-to-face, as it ties into the face-to-face concept that we see going on here, while divided between who was sent, who wasn't, and we and I, etc., we can still hold it all together in regards to its ideology and what's being presented doctrinally. So for this is the emphasis of the opening phrase, for this reason, dia utos, the cause of this, that draws from the primary cause of Timothy's return in verse 2 and 4. Primary cause was to get a shepherd back with these people, because they're in danger, spiritually. They're under attack. And that is to make sure, obviously, that they're given doctrine and additional encouragement from a bona fide spiritual shepherd as responsible for them in regards to the situation. So this draws off of that fact, but it's an additional reason. So, 5 again, that cause was to reinforce their faith, to stay spiritually and emotionally balanced by means of face-to-face teaching and exhorting and continuing to fill their test in regards to Timothy's return. That is the primary cause. Right pastor, right congregation together face-to-face. So 6, however, just as important is the fact that in pastoral vacancy, the pastor-teacher is void of being in touch with the spiritual condition of his charge and effectually neutralizes his role as a spiritual guardian. The office, the highest office of the church, the pastor, is designed to be a guardian and protector spiritually. Obviously, it doesn't mean run around following everybody and say, oh, well, don't do that, don't do this. But in regards to my office and overseeing the church, and that aspect of the pastoral role is brought out as Paul here in Acts 20, exhorting the elders here at Ephesus, which looks at and emphasizes those in pastoral roles as are brought out here in verse 27 and 28. He says, first and foremost, verse 27, for and he is to be used as an example, for I did not shrink from declaring to you the whole purpose of God, the entire counsel. You know, a pastor cannot shy away from doctrine because of unpopularity, because other people may flip their finger off at you over it, or whatever. See, I'm not going to avoid doctrine because of that. People who know me long enough know that. The design is to try to incorporate all the doctrine, the entire counsel. You seek the entire counsel and let the doctrine interpret itself, all these other things. And then in verse 28, the exhortation is, be on guard for yourselves and for all the flock. So here we have the shepherding metaphor already introduced. And the guardian role in regards to not only themselves, but for who's been allotted to their charge, as Peter so states it. And Peter, among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers to shepherd the church of God, which he purchased with his own blood. So, a pastor, in regards to being vacant from a local church, at least the sheep, in a situation where the pastor is being neutralized in regards to his effectiveness of guarding the sheep spiritually otherwise. And it's just common sense. 7, this in turn leaves the church open to satanic attack without recourse and maximum protection, greatly increasing the potential of nullifying further spiritual advance. Ta-da, here's Satan in here, engaged in all this persecution to do what? To sever the spiritual heads from the sheep. And it puts the church in that condition, it puts them in their most vulnerable state. At least without, you know, the protection of a leader in that regard. One that is qualified, I might add. So this in turn leaves the church open to satanic attack without recourse to maximum protection, greatly increasing the potential of nullifying further spiritual advance. 8, these principles govern Paul's thoughts as a secondary cause behind for this reason. As the secondary cause behind for this reason is explained in the second half of our verse. Fearing the tempter might have tempted you. So 9, Paul's very real concern was that Satan undermined this local church by pressuring them to the point they capitulated, threw in the towel, if you will, repudiating the truth they were previously taught. 10, now what is not generally addressed by commentaries, other than just an acknowledgement in a general way, is that Paul's concern rests on the fact that he was not with them. In other words, as we know, face-to-face had been severed due to the persecution. 11, it is this fact that exemplifies the negative role of vacant face-to-face. It's what brings out the illustration. 12, because Paul is not present with the Thessalonians, is why verse 5 is in this epistle. If he was with them, there would be no need of verse 5. Or if Timothy had already, or one of the pastors were there that could report it back to him otherwise immediately. We wouldn't need verse 5. The reason why we need verse 5 is because the relationship had been severed. The face-to-face relationship was, at this point in time, or for that period of time, vacant. And that's why, again, secondarily, why Timothy was sent. So, because Paul is not present with the Thessalonians, verse point 12 is why verse 5 is in this epistle. 13, the adjusted pastor teacher has an ever-present concern for his flock, lest they should fall away. The pastor truly does have personal concern for each and every one of those allotted to their charge. And the primary concern is leaving doctrine. Undermining doctrine and things of this nature. Concern is spiritual, obviously physical too. So that's just part of the pastoral role. Like a parent with a child. A husband with a wife. 14, that concern is greatly multiplied in the event that face-to-face is severed as it places him in the void of knowing at all. 15, further, his vacancy prohibits any immediate help on his part. If you're not there, you can't help. 16, in this condition, the local body is without a head and at the most vulnerable for satanic attack, the pastor teacher is defenseless to respond on their behalf. This highlights the very personal nature and concern expressed by Paul in this verse. Why he is beside himself, if you will, personally. This shows you how much affection he had for his sheep. He knew they were under attack. He knew the situation. He warned them of it. He did what he could. He'd run out, and now he couldn't do anything. Because he went there, basically, he could do his faith for us and pray and do what he could and let God open doors to provide otherwise. As we see, Timothy was a provision at this point in time. So 18, there are only two alternatives Paul can appeal to in this case. That's faith rest, as always. Always faith rest. And seek to reestablish the presence of a shepherd. 19, enter the additional reason Timothy was sent in verse 5. Why you had this kind of repetitive verbiage here. And I also, that emphasis, sent. So 20, the temporal phrase, when I can endure it no longer, looks to the personal nature of testing, impacting Paul as the apostolic head of the Thessalonian church. 21, this says he considered his office as the ultimate spiritual authority in this regard. 22, the words endure, stego, and no longer, maketi, are resumptive of verse 1, adding a secondary aspect to the test overall. 23, in this vein, it indicates Paul coming to a point personally that demanded deliverance by God on his behalf, and another reason for Timothy's dispatch. That's pretty cool. The whole team was at their end, if you will, in regards to handling the test. You know, just we got to know. They understood the doctrine, the importance of doctrine, and Paul especially so. See, that's the idea. Paul especially so. Because of his responsibility. He took his responsibility seriously, by the way. It wasn't some figurehead. Oh, you know, some people want to be church authorities to be figureheads so they can look good. No, he had a responsibility, and he worked hard at it. in regards to those, and he obviously especially felt responsible being the apostolic authority in regards to this situation. And he, in that right and realm, that added additional pressure to him. What pressures the other authorities had, Paul, as the ultimate authority, had additional pressure. That's generally the way it works. If the people in authority are doing their job and they have their proper concern. So, twenty-three again. In this vein, it indicates Paul coming to appoint personally as the man of deliverance by God on his behalf. And another reason for Timothy's dispatch. 24, that point is mentioned is the pressure on him of this local church being without a spiritual guardian. 25, that is an additional doctrinal aspect as to why God delivers reuniting this church with a qualified shepherd, via Timothy, obviously, in this case. It's brought out by the compound adjunctive pronoun I also, cargo. It's an additional doctrinal aspect in addition to the general doctrine of right pastor, right congregation on top of it. If you've been keeping up with the doctrinal lessons weaved through this thing. So 26, Paul emphatically declares that the determination to send Timothy is further based on his personal concern as their spiritual head. So 27, the verb sent, pimpo, is further resumptive, verse 1, though Timothy's name is here omitted. Verse 2, sent, and specifically he said Timothy, and we brought out that was to draw attention to Timothy. So here it's omitted. 28, the omission is designed to transfer attention from Timothy contextually, though he's still understood as the object of who was sent, to Paul's situation of absentia as their spiritual head, as their guard, ultimately. 29, the purpose infinitive to find out about, gnosko, is literally in order to know, in order to know. 30, the content of knowledge centers on their volitional, the content of knowledge, what he wants to know about, centers on their volition, described as your faith, su hepistis, with the faith, with the definite article again being active, just as it was in verse 2. Hence their volitional state. 31, vacant face-to-face, there is no way a PT can confirm the existence of positive volition. The primary evidence in regards to the existence of positive volition is stipulated for us by Christ himself in John 3:21. He who practices the truth comes to the light, that his works might be manifested, evidenced, as having been performed, literally, having been wrought, in God, in the sphere of the divine directives that God has established. And the light here is in regards to the truth of Bible doctrine. When you come to Bible class, I present to you the light of Bible doctrine in the midst of a world encompassed spiritually in darkness otherwise. And so therefore, hopefully, you've got the ability to see in this darkness and the human viewpoint plane the world itself and not trip over and permanently hurt yourself in regards to your Christian life and see what's before you rather than running around completely blind to the realities of God and his plan for mankind otherwise. And the very primary, most basic evidence of positive volition, as these verses 19 through 21 deal with volition, is whether they come to the light or they don't, as we saw in verse 20. And obviously that all begins in regards to gospel phase 1, the light of who and what Jesus Christ is. And then for phase 2, obviously, it looks at one's willingness to present themselves before the teaching of sound doctrine so they could conduct their Christian life appropriately and serve God in this fashion. So let people give their excuses, what they want to give in regards to people not being in Bible class or why they're not in Bible class. I'm here to tell you, there's no way as a pastor teacher I can tell you whether they're positive from negative if they're not coming to Bible class. I don't care what other people may say about them. If they're not in Bible class somewhere, then you don't have any evidence of what you're stating. Ho-ho. That's the way it is. That's the bottom line. Now, they may give indications that they're looking to be positive or they're seekers in that sense. But the evidence is not there until they show up. It's that simple. And it's not anything new. That doctrine's been taught for eons in this regard. All right, well, I probably wore you out today. Let that soak in. Pick this up to see. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, to continue to light us to these things in Jesus' name.